giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody. This is Ben Orenstein with the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is October 23rd, and I am here today with Brennan Dunn, author of Double Your Freelancing Rate, founder of PlanScope, which is a tool to manage the budget, scope, and timelines of your projects, and recently a workshop on building your own consultancy. And as he just told me as we kicked off the podcast, even more projects that I'm sure we're going to dive into. Welcome, Brennan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well.
Good.
So I recently listened to your interview on the Calzumeus podcast.
Is that so? Calzumeus, yeah.
Calzumeus podcast with Patrick McKenzie.
Yep.
And a friend of his.
Keith Parhuk, yep.
Yeah, that was a great podcast, by the way. People worth checking out. Focused on, seemed like consulting, how to bill more as a freelancer, how to focus yourself more on the value you're providing to clients. Lots of useful stuff in there.
Yeah, we jumped around a bit. I mean, at first we talked about how to provide value or how to position yourself as a value producer to your clients. And we segued into building a consultancy, and then we went into, I think, life cycle marketing. So
yeah,
we jumped around, but it was a lot of fun to record.
Yeah. So I went through the transcript last night. It's definitely worth checking out. One thing that jumped out to me that I thought was interesting, which was a quote from you, said, for the first year and a half after you moved from being a freelancer mm-hmm. to running your own consultancy, you made less money.
Yeah.
Which I thought was super interesting. Like, how did that happen?
I think I had unrealistic expectations of cash flow. So what I discovered was really when I was a freelancer, it was more incidental work. Like, I would get referrals and my pipeline was always steady enough, but it was really just providing for me. I made the mistake of hiring around projects, and then I would have people and there'd be dead time, and they still had to get paid. And obviously I was the last person to get paid.
Right.
So there were times when I couldn't pay myself just because, frankly, I didn't have a formal business development strategy.
Hmm.
I kind of assumed that things would just kind of stay steady. But in the world of consulting, it fluctuates.
Hmm.
Or at least it does until you get to a certain point. So yeah, there were times when we were just starting out where we, you know, I had people on salary and, you know, they weren't fully utilized. So, and I had no idea how to price according to what we were delivering. So we were back of the napkin pricing looked good, but I never really, when I started actually, you know, doing it for real and we scaled up, there would be downtime, there would be just different things, sick leave,
yeah,
things that you don't really, you know, always calculate for.
So it's the big difference between freelancing where it's just income going to you, yeah, versus now you have a fixed expense of an employee.
We had an office,
yeah,
and we had a lot of overhead. So yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, I didn't do enough planning. I didn't do enough actual, okay, this is becoming more than just me. It's a real business now with fixed expenses, and I need a budget accordingly and make sure everything's going to be able to be sustainable long term.
So what's a good rough rule of thumb? If I think an employee costs me X per week, what do you need to charge for that person's time?
So I mean, a lot of it, frankly, depends on the worth of your brand, right? Like, I mean, companies like Thoughtbot will be able to charge a lot more than guys who are sitting out of their garage because mm-hmm. you have a track record. So there's really two factors, I think. You need to first, I think, set aside money before bringing anyone on board.
Mm.
I was talking to Dan Martell, who once advised me to basically have $30,000 in savings per new employee. Even if you have the work for them, just to kind of have a fallback plan in
sure.
the event that's something, you know, even though, because I'm, like I said, I made the mistake of hiring against projects. So we'd get a big project, multi-month project, and I would, hire people and, you know, I didn't do enough planning and keeping the pipeline full for beyond that project. And I mean, eventually I figured that out, but I never, you know, I was more of a technician instead of a business owner, and I was good at writing software.
Right.
And I necessarily was not good at running a company until, I stumbled a lot. And that's
sure.
really what that was.
This feels like the classic trap of like the maker that turns into the manager.
Right.
And like,
exactly.
It turns out those are not the same skill sets.
No, no. I mean, it's jumping. If you ever read the E-Myth book series, it's
the same thing.
It's technician entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of technicians go into owning a company that is bigger than themselves. And if they don't know what they're doing on the business side of things, it can be pretty dangerous.
Mm. Are you still involved with your consultancy?
Yeah, I promoted somebody to replace me.
Okay.
I'm right now heads down on products. That's really all I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Although I am, ever since I've been doing a lot of blog posts recently on how I've, specifically around PlanScope, but how I've done things like increased growth rate from 8% a month to 18% a month, and just different onboarding things and retention strategies. And I've gotten requests from software companies who are much bigger than me who say, well, if you can do that for yourself and you're at this scale, would you be interested in consulting with us on, you know, implementing some of that for our company?
Uh-huh.
So it's a
much you double your rates and say yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a much different type of consulting. I mean, I'm used to, startups who need a product built coming to me and saying, here's what we're thinking. And I would consult with them and help them put together a, multi-month roadmap on building something. And now people are saying, let's work together for a week or two and we'll just jump into, whether it be the way we, email our users or, a guided tour or something related to onboarding. Let's put together a strategy. So it's more business consulting, I think, instead of just, kind of typical Rails developer being hired by company X to build.
Right. Which I imagine is a lot more profitable basically because you can tie the thing that you're doing to a direct increase in revenue.
Yeah. And I've actually, speaking of which, one of my new mottos or ways of operating is when a client, and I've only had two or three because I really just started doing this, but I will only work with somebody if I can pretty much guarantee that there will be a positive ROI.
Mm-hmm.
So if they come to me and they say my growth rate is X and I'm looking to get it to this, or increase it,
mm-hmm.
I'll work with them to see if it's feasible to make more money than they're going to spend on me. And people like that.
I'm sure.
They like knowing, okay, you're only going to really want to work with us if you can guarantee that the long-term effect of what our engagement will pay off more than we spent.
Right.
Which is something, especially when you're working with a lot of funded startups, they don't even have a profit model. So, there usually isn't that ability.
Uh-huh. So we've talked about PlanScope a couple times. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of your major product at this point, right?
It's my long-term product.
Okay. Describe that real quick?
Sure. So I realized that there is always a disconnect between when working on client projects, between the scope of a project and what had to be done versus the money or the budget of a project. So really PlanScope is a task management tool with integrated time tracking that lets you plug in your hourly rate. So you can basically, your clients can see at any given time how much they're spending and on what. I really was inspired when I was taking a cab once to the airport, and I'm always frustrated when I'm in a cab and they don't have a meter because mm-hmm. I just think the guy's pulling a number out of thin air when we get to the destination.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, I could kind of, I liked knowing that I could sit back in the back seat and see, okay, we're stuck in traffic for a while and I can see my price going up because we're stuck in traffic or there's a detour or something like that. So what PlanScope lets your clients do and you do is see in real time, where money's being spent on any given day, on what it's being spent, and, how on track are we for finishing up the scope estimated with the budget we have remaining.
Hmm.
So it's really targeting independent consultants, freelancers, or small teams, who primarily work on shorter engagements, maybe a month, 2 month, project, and, who have clients who are very particular about the money being spent.
Hmm.
Because we do things like we send a daily email report to your clients that say, these are the tasks that were worked on. This is what you need to QA. And this is how much money you spent today.
Hmm.
So, clients love it, which means it's hard. I mean, you guys, as, being in the project management space too, with Trajectory, it's not always easy to get clients on board with kind of being active in a project.
Mm-hmm.
So, our motto is force them to be active by constantly emailing them and saying, you know, this is a snapshot of where we are today.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's completely bootstrapped. I've never really advertised for PlanScope, and, it's growing pretty steadily. Mm-hmm. It was, like I was saying, at about an 8% a month growth rate. Last month I revamped entirely the onboarding. So when you sign up, I realized what was keeping people from paying, and that was, people. So we integrate with Harvest and FreshBooks and all these different time tracking tools.
Yep.
What I realized is if people do not integrate and they do not invite clients, chances are they're not going to pay.
Right.
But if they do, especially if they invite a client, like if you're in your trial period and you invite a client in your product, you're not going to be like, oh yeah, the trial expired, let's move on to the next app.
Right.
So getting people to invite their clients immediately, which is something that people want to do. It's just, it wasn't immediately obvious. So make that like the first thing they do when setting up a project. And it more than doubled the growth rate. I'm constantly experimenting with different things. I'm split testing. I'm doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. So. What are you testing right now?
Right now, I'm about to deploy capturing credit card info up front.
Mm.
Everyone who's done it would never turn back. Mm. It's just, especially when dealing with support, you don't want to support people who never have any intention to actually become a customer.
Right.
They just take time. and it's, you know, it's just, some people will do that. They'll sign up and they never intend to actually, to use your product. Yet they'll use your support and they'll basically be, I don't want to say it like this, but overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also testing, different variations of the headline on the homepage. I'm always trying to run a split test on something on the marketing site. I'm starting to split test what happened, because most people judge a conversion based on when they sign up.
Mm.
I judge it based on when they actually either become a paying customer or have a significant lifetime value.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's really easy to sign up, that's great. But, you know, 40 to 60% of people who sign up are never going to come back. Like they'll start their trial, but they'll never come back.
Yeah.
So that's not really the best metric to use. You need to look at the big picture.
Yeah. So in terms of dollars, has the onboarding change been the most profitable, the biggest needle mover?
Yeah. Onboarding has been it. Yep. I mean, it's been growing. I'm just shy of $4,000 a month revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds small, but you know, over time, it's been growing pretty linearly. I mean, it's not a hockey stick curve or anything like that, but linear growth is nice. I mean, the benefit of SaaS is you can kind of, as long as your growth outweighs your churn, you're in a pretty good position.
Right.
So I actually just blogged about this recently. I've been doing some of the info products because in order to focus on building PlanScope, I need a runway of cash.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's why the book's done extremely well in helping that. And now a lot of people who read my book said, hey, I want to know more about what it was like, you know, with your consultancy. You know, I'm interested in, I might not want to become a brick and mortar consultancy, but I want to team up with some people and maybe do like a little virtual shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so really what I've done is I put together a really comprehensive workshop where I'm pretty much, it's mainly about business development, but how to, you know, when you have a team, you can't just wait for people to come to you. You need to kind of make an effort.
Yeah. I was checking that out last night. It looks like you're almost sold out in terms of
we had one more sale yesterday. So I think there are two seats left. There might be three. One mm-hmm. guy's, might move to December, but, almost sold out. And that's the power of emailing. I mean, I have a weekly email list that I'm pretty much just giving away free info,
mm-hmm.
Which is really a follow-up to my book. So you buy the book, you're on this list, or you can sign up to the list independently. and I'm giving away free info, but that is the best way to get people to know that you're legit.
Right.
And then I'm able to cross promote or upsell through that. And a good warm email list is really good.
Right. Yeah. You were saying that the workshop sold like $13,000 worth in the first 4 hours.
$14,000. Yeah. Which is incredible.
Like, right. From one email, basically. Yeah. And had you even built the workshop at that point?
Yeah. I had about half of it done. Okay. Now it's complete. But at that point, yeah, I had the first half complete. But it's just, you know, you're never going to get that through a blog post or through Twitter or something.
Right.
Like, because email is a place where people look at emails as being one-to-one communications, right?
Right.
Like, you know, Ben's emailing Brennan or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting too. Like, I will glibly mark 200 blog posts in my RSS feed as read,
right,
and never look at them.
Right.
But like, you would never do that with 200 emails.
No, and emails are padded by other important emails from clients or your boss or someone.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the inbox is where people in our profession do stuff.
Right. Plus, like you said, you're sort of establishing yourself as an authority. It's like, I'm here, I'm giving you use. Clearly this guy knows what's up. He's emailed me 7 times with really good, useful things. His ebook is probably going to be great.
I mean, and I've got this, not to give away too much of the secret sauce, but I have this massive, huge funnel that starts at PlanScope, where I offer 8 free reports, which are sent over the span of a month. And then that crosses over to my, free, month or weekly newsletter. And that also that the reports, I have a discount coupon for my book. So if you stick around and you get enough, you know, I think on the 4th report is when I promote the book.
Mm-hmm.
I can basically say, if you like the quality of what I'm sending you here, you can get this times 100 through the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then likewise, if the book has helped you a lot and you want to take the next step, if you're, you know, you're freelancing and you want to grow beyond yourself, now it's the book times 1,000. So it's a big funnel.
Yeah.
Is really what it is.
It's a funnel with multiple exits that all end in
multiple entrances
paid. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a lot of this through Ramit Sethi or Sethi. I think I can never pronounce his last name.
I will teach you to be rich.
Yes, yeah. Blog. That guy's a master of this.
Mm.
And he has so many different product offerings, and he has legitimately valuable things to offer. And, if you ever want a good example of copywriting, join his list, because he delivers, sometimes multiple times a week, but really good content. So yeah, a lot of what he was doing inspired me to do what I'm doing now.
So you studied Greek back in school, right?
Yeah.
How did that turn into this?
So I went to St. John's College in Annapolis, and it's the kind of school where there's really no computers on campus. I actually had to, this is back when they had unlimited wireless data plans in 2003, I think, on those PCMCIA cards that you could get from like Sprint or something.
Yeah.
So the campus didn't really have good internet. So I bought one of these, and I didn't have a laptop at the time, but I found like a whatever those slot things for tower computers, PCs, that would let you put in laptop cards into it. So that was my way of getting internet. And so I was studying liberal arts. I was studying the classics. Mm-hmm. And I read constantly. I still do a lot of reading, but I also like technology. I've always, you know, liked computers, and it wasn't a school for that. But I was able to do that on the side. And that's really when I started freelancing, was in college. I was doing Flash sites.
A lot of people got their start there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That are around this age group, this cohort, roughly, I think.
Right. Right.
Got started in Flash.
Yeah. I was actually, I did Flash, and then I started doing Flex, which brought me to Java, which then brought me to Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was just a lot of lucky coincidences. You know, I had a boss, my first job out of college, I was doing Java development, and he was a huge Apple fanboy. And that was when that 37 singles video was on Apple.com of them. It was basically like a pitch piece for Rails and Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
And it had Jason and DHH like in their little swank elevator in their office. And my boss was like, I want that. And he, you know, he had this conception that you would immediately be cool like those guys if you were using Rails instead of Java. So I got
the is true, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I got the green light to this was like Rails 0.7 or something pre-1.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I had no idea what I was doing, but it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And stuck with it ever since.
Hmm. And then you've made the turn towards this sort of multiple streams of income, SaaS app, info product thing from a consultancy.
Yes.
Was that always the goal, or did you want to just build the consultancy first?
I think in the back of my head, it always was the goal. I really looked up to, I don't want to say lifestyle business owners, but product owners, you know, people who
it's not a bad word.
No, I don't think it is, but some people think it is.
Yeah. We're not VCs here.
Right. So, I always just wanted... I wanted products to enable me to have a direct relationship with a lot of customers and also make it so there would never be one customer who held too much sway. Mm-hmm. So with consulting, if you have maybe 4 or 5 active clients, if one major client pulls out, you've got a staffing issue. If you have a few thousand customers, one guy leaves overnight, big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always really appealed to me.
Hmm. In June on your blog, you wrote, my strategy for getting new accounts was content marketing. I was hoping that by giving away information to consultants, the Google gods would reward my hard work. Not so, or at least not yet. Last month, I signed up 5 new accounts, which is pitiful comparatively. Mm-hmm. So it seems like at first that strategy you're using didn't work so well.
It takes, you can have a lot of content, but until Google knows that your content's respectable, they're not going to rank it that high.
Mm-hmm.
What actually fixed that was guest blogs or guest blog posts. So I would go to, a blog that was something my audience would read.
Yep.
And I would just write a post for them and they would create a, you know, they would link back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, I think, improved my page rank, which then helped Google index. So I'm getting about 1/4 of all new accounts organically now.
Oh, wow.
Which was definitely a step up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think back in July, I mentioned I got 5 new signups.
That's 5,
or something.
Yeah.
And I think that was 5 paid. So I got a lot more trials. And I think a lot of that had to do with really bad, you know, you basically dumping people into a empty account and not giving them any guidance on how to get started.
Yeah.
Comparatively, I think last month it was more like 20 or something. So it's grown quite a bit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So I noticed on the ebook landing page,
mm-hmm.
You don't mention how long the book is. You never say how many pages it is.
Right.
Is that intentional?
That's kind of like saying, it's like listing features.
Uh huh.
I mean, I mean, people care about results.
Right.
So I talk about the outcome of reading the book, mm-hmm. which I think is ultimately what matters. I've never been I actually debated whether or not I should put that.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who have done this before said, don't even worry about it. Like it's not really a factor. What's mm-hmm. a fact. And it's long enough. I think it's 107 pages. What's ultimately a factor is, are you emphasizing the pain points that people have
mm-hmm.
and are you providing a solution to that pain? How you get there. It's kind of like, I always compare it to the Microsoft and Apple strategy for when Microsoft was selling the Zune, how they would focus on this many gigabytes and all these features
right.
of the Zune. And Apple's approach has always been more the emotional appeal. Like,
mm-hmm.
You'll have all your songs or, mm-hmm. The way they advertise FaceTime is not, you know, it was a soldier talking to his newborn child or meeting his newborn child across the ocean. That's always been the kind of what I've been trying to, and a lot of that came from Sean D'Souza, who put together a product called the Brain Audit, which is psychology. I mean, it's how, you know, people, you can't sell something unless people know that there's a pain that product's solving.
Mm-hmm.
His comparison is always, you know, if you're wet and cold out in the rain, the solution isn't an umbrella. The solution is to get out of the rain and to warm yourself. So it could be an umbrella. It could be going inside. It could be any number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the landing page of the book and the workshop is really mainly focused on you know, what you're going to get, what tomorrow will look like after you read the book.
And the implementation is really unimportant if you can deliver on the features, right? Like if I open up the ebook and it's only four pages, but in fact it is amazing and it does what it promises.
Right.
That's okay.
I mean, it reminds me of, you know, growing up in high school, you know, your report would need to be X many pages, double spaced. I mean, that's kind of like, anyone who actually looks at it understands that that doesn't matter. What matters is the content.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You offer a refund for the ebook that also includes an hour of your consulting time.
Yep.
Has anybody taken you up on that?
Not for the hour. I've had a total of two refunds and 800 and something sales.
Okay.
So, I've also split tested the refund on the, it basically, I don't think it's a clean double conversion, but that being there affects sales dramatically.
Just the sentence about offering the refund?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's overcoming objections, right? So right. People, and I have a whole, after the testimonials, I have this whole section on objections. You know, is this for me? Why are you qualified to tell me this? Mm-hmm. And yeah, all of that just affects, it helps sales. And the fact is, okay, so I've refunded two copies of a PDF, you know, like, I mean, it's more than the benefit has outweighed the cost dramatically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what does victory look like for you?
I think victory for me, will be when I get to the, so it's already getting to the point now with my workshop where I might have enough demand to offer one every 2 months or one every month. That would give me a significant runway monthly for myself, which will then help me reinvest all that income into things like PlanScope.
Mm-hmm.
When I can, I think by this time next year, if PlanScope stays at the growth rate it's currently experiencing, I think I'll be able to live pretty much solely off that, which will then let me, I mean, I'm pretty positive, I might be wrong, but I'm pretty positive that by January or February, I'll be able to stop doing the kind of consulting I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Because consulting and building products is very hard. It's very hard to balance the two. It's a lot of context switching.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I can just focus solely on building a better product instead of trading hours for money on the consulting side of things, that's when I think I'll, and I have a lot of people I look up to who are there. People like Ruben Gomez of BidSketch or Amy Hoy and Thomas Fuchs of Freckle. They've gotten to that point. And that's kind of they're the benchmark that I'm aiming for.
Mm-hmm. And then what? So you get there.
I mean, honestly, this is all means to an end to be able to, when I was running the consultancy full time, I was working downtown. I would leave the house at 7 a.m. in the morning, get home at 7 p.m. I really missed like ages 2 to 3 of my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old at home. I mean, the point of doing all this is to enable, I think, me to spend the time I want to spend with my kids and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this all boils down to. You know, I'm not looking, if I wanted, you know, massive riches and reputation, I would look at the VC route or something, or, you know, the high growth startup-y type of a lifestyle, but I'm really not that interested in that.
Mm. It's interesting. I read in, there's a line in Tim Ferriss's book, which is people say that they want to be rich, but when you ask them, what would you do if you were rich? It's what they really want is the freedom.
Right.
They want the free time and the ability to choose what they're doing and where they go.
Right.
And it sounds like that's true for you too.
Yeah. And honestly, I get more enjoyment out of building products that are helping people's businesses do better. So I got an email from one of my customers of PlanScope who said he actually discovered that you could use PlanScope to estimate projects because you plug in your rate and you can estimate a project. And he invited clients before they were actual clients into it. And said, go for it, you know, reduce scope, add scope, and you can see in real time how that's affecting your cost or your estimated cost. And he wrote to me saying he landed, I think, like a $50,000 job that he wouldn't have gotten. And he was the most expensive out of all the people that this client was shopping around at.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of transparency that my product gave his company made him get that, you know, so here he is paying me $12 a month and just, and landed, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I really, that's, it's rare to find that kind of, result, I think, with standard consulting. I think, when you're doing a great B2B product, and I think a great product educates, it doesn't just, it's not just a glorified CRUD app, you know, it helps people find a workflow or find a way of doing business that they didn't know about or think about before. So PlanScope is literally changing for a lot of my customers how they run their projects, and they end up having happier clients and, you know, better businesses as a result. And that's something I've really enjoyed doing. And because it's just me, I mean, when I get a support ticket, it's, you know, hey, Brennan, dot, dot, dot. I mean, it's never, we don't use any, you know, I'm using Intercom, and it's very, I mean, people have paid me before they had to, because I replied in less than 5 minutes with a sent from my iPhone at the bottom of the support request.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like, because it's the thing that I kind of wish I had when I started out doing consulting.
Hmm.
And that's why I built it, because I realized that I didn't like getting into awkward 11th hour conversations with clients. So the more transparent I could be, the better. And no tool is ever going to solve that, but a tool can help, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's, PlanScope is definitely my target. But one thing I realized is it's hard to get people to switch. Like, no one's like, I need a new project management tool.
Mm.
But it's an impulse buy to say, hey, why don't you pick up this book I wrote on how to revisit your pricing strategy. And then the book's philosophy is completely in line with my product's philosophy. And throughout the book, I subtly mention that I have this other product that, if they like the way that the book, if they like the philosophy of the book, they might like the philosophy of PlanScope.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have concrete metrics, but it's driven a lot of sales, for my SaaS app, because, the book is really like a gateway drug.
Right.
So,
So it seems like you've done a decent number of interviews recently.
Mm-hmm.
What is the interview question that you wish you got asked, but you do not?
Putting me on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think you already asked it. I think it was what's the end goal?
Mm.
Or, cause that, I mean, I've talked about that in private to people or during like the pre-interview part of when I'm talking to somebody. But I think I was at MicroConf last year, and Patrick McKenzie, Patty 11, the bingo card creator guy.
That'll forever be his legacy.
Yes. Although he has appointment reminder, which is going to be
right.
his big exit.
Mm.
He said something, I forgot, something in Japanese, about everything we're doing now is temporary or ephemeral or something like that.
Mm.
And, he was like, you know, when we're all old and dying, none of us are going to care about, you know, our traction rates or growth rates or anything. We're going to care about whether or not we enjoyed, you know, our life.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, this is why I tend to be very critical of, like the, Silicon Valley way of doing things where, you know, they pride themselves on overworking and mm-hmm. working too hard and, on stuff that is really a crapshoot in a lot of ways. What I'm focusing on now is really low risk, you know, low risk, relatively modest reward, products. So whether we PlanScope with the book or the course, none of it was, oh, I've got this great idea, I'm going to go build it. It was always a response to, pain points that people were vocally complaining about online. So I knew there was an audience who was willing to pay for this, and on all of these products, whether PlanScope, I launched it and I had 100 new accounts within a few hours because I built up a big mailing list.
Mm.
Likewise with the book, I sold $6,000 of the book before it was even written, as a way of validating, because it's very easy for somebody to say, yes, I'm interested, tell me about it when it's available. But when somebody validates your product with cash, it's significantly better.
Yeah.
And I've done the same with the workshop too. I mean, those first sales were, I only had about half the material complete at that point. So I don't want to, I don't like wasting time on things that won't actually, you know, pan out to anything. So,
So if you are lucky enough to have one, what would you hope your legacy would be?
It's a good question. Depends on who the legacy is for, right? If the legacy is peers or people who, maybe consult or have a day job or do whatever. I think actually one thing that bothers me is that people, I've been doing a lot of promotion on Hacker News recently, and a lot of people there have this really distaste of all things marketing. They have this idea that you can build something, you can build a really amazingly developed product, you know, that's built the right way. It's fully tested. It's got a great UI. It's done everything right, and that it should just find its way into the hands of the right people. I think I saw a tweet from I forgot who, but they were saying that growth hacking is just a label to make marketing palatable for people who hate marketing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a degree of truth to that. And I think, like, I get a lot of enjoyment telling the story of why people should use PlanScope. I mean, writing the marketing site and communicating and talking about how the product is, you know, the product's just software, but using the software will benefit people. And that, to me, is something I really enjoy. And I don't know why there's this stigma around marketing being this evil, you know, terrible thing. I think it's really just it's messaging, and it's getting your product, something you've worked really hard on, into the hands of people that need something like that and want something like that. And so maybe that could be part of it.
You want to improve marketing's marketing.
I just want to, I think it has, there's a lot we can learn from the late night infomercials and everything, you know, about how there's a difference in quality in the products, a huge difference in quality in the products. I'm willing to bet that their refund rate is a lot higher than 2 out of 800, for instance. But the, there's so much. My dad had a timeshare company, which is, you know, and he did a lot of work with direct mail back in the '80s. And, I learned a lot from that, and none of that's changed. Like, we tend to think of internet products as being this different ballgame, that the old rules don't apply, but people really haven't changed. And what appeals to people through a direct mail postcard isn't as far off, I think, as what appeals to people through a really nicely done marketing site. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely, when it comes to my work as a consultant, that's what I really enjoy most now. You know, it's instead of hacking on code, hack on, I don't want to say people, but you know, like that stuff really appeals to me. And seeing the big picture and kind of bridging the needs of a marketing department with the needs of an engineering department, I think is something I would like to have less of. You know, I see too many great products that just flounder and die because there's this war between whoever is trying to sell it and whoever's building it. So that's something that I guess that's definitely a huge passion point of mine.
Well, I think that just about wraps things up.
Okay.
If people want to get in touch with you, what's a good way to do that?
On Twitter, I'm Brennan Dunn, BrennanDunn, or me at BrennanDunn.com.
Uh-huh. And PlanScope, how would they find that?
PlanScope.io.
Okay. And I think there's links to things like your ebooks and things like that.
Yeah, if you go to my Twitter account and my bio, I think I've got links outward to the different things.
Awesome. Now, often on the podcast, we'll take time to answer your questions. If you have something you'd like us to tackle on the air, you can mail that question to info@thoughtbot.com or tweet to us @thoughtbot. Today's podcast was recorded by Shauna Quintal, edited by Edward Lovell, and produced by Chad Pytel. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.